Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this first day of spring, Thursday, March 20th. I'm Ray Graff. Gardening today, we welcome Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery. You got a gardening question? Oh, there are many. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Also, you could email if you wish, voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. This, based upon the number of emails we already have, is going to be a cracking good show. Stand by. We'll get it underway right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today. We have three out of the four gardeners, so this show should be at least 75% as good as usual. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. He's here. Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. He's here. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. He's here. Dale Isla Riggs, not present today, but a good excuse. So, we'll cut her some slack. We welcome your gardening calls right now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Hello, gardeners.
Hey, thanks for having us, right?
You guys ready to work a little extra hard today?
So spring is sprung.
Yeah. We'll do it. Man, this is exciting.
There's lots of great things to do, but, you know, you also still want to be careful that you don't do too much too soon.
Yeah. Well, I've got to get my papaya trees in.
Okay.
Stop. You still got time for that.
Definitely. There's plenty of time for that.
Okay.
I'm just saying that. You definitely be raking the lawn in those open, sunny places, picking up the sticks. Good
right.
exercise,
yeah.
right? You could definitely be cleaning up perennial gardens that are, again, in the sun. And when you step on the ground, it's nice and firm. It's not squishy. Watch out if you still have frost in the ground, like some people. Those places you want to wait a little while before you get out
there. So how far down around these parts would you reckon the frost is?
Last week, there was still 2 feet of frost.
Really?
I think this
week. 2 feet down?
Yeah.
Because, you know, my gardener also doubles as a metal detector hobbyist. And she's out there digging.
I think the first foot or two's
she's
gone where we are.
It is.
She got that far down.
Yeah, for us, it's just the river valley, the Housatonic River Valley, where and on this, you know, the south end of the county, that's looking good. The Pittsfield North, still a fair amount of frost and some snow pockets. The other thing people always want to do, because they hear other people say it, is plant their peas on St. Patrick's Day.
Really?
It's always too early.
Too early.
Always for us.
Okay.
You don't gain that much by trying to push it early. You just don't.
You can get bigger peas, right?
No.
Orange size or grapefruit size.
They rot.
Peas.
They sit there. They don't do anything.
Exactly. You're not really pushing it ahead of another week. Is not going to really give you that
tomatoes.
Much extra.
You put them in really early, and it gets cold, and they're not going to do anything.
It's a good time to get your pea seeds lined up, know where you're going to put them. Maybe if that garden spot is workable, you could tidy that up so that it's ready to receive those seeds. But probably the first week in April is a much better week.
Yeah. It's a good time of year to test your seeds, though, if you haven't done that already.
How do you test them?
So you get your seeds, get a wet paper towel, put them in a wet paper towel, like a Ziploc bag in a relatively dark area, and they'll germinate.
Or they won't.
So you'll see if they'll sprout.
But then you're using up your seeds.
You only use a few, though. You get a few out of a packet. And the reason for that is if they're not going to work and you get to the planting time, here it is, April, let's go.
Yeah.
And now your seeds aren't going to germinate because they sat there for 2 years. Or even if they're not that old, sometimes you get seeds that you buy that are just don't work.
More likely on ones you've kept over.
Yeah, most likely on those.
For this year, it's probably all right.
Usually pretty good.
I keep
good,
some tomato seeds every year, and I always wonder about that, but I always forget to try. And so far, they've always been pretty good, even some three-year-old ones.
Yeah, that's true, and they will. But, you know, sometimes you get a bunk or, you know, seeds that just don't sprout.
The other thing you want to do now, speaking of testing, is check your soil.
Really?
You know, we say this so many times on here. If you had a garden last year and it just wasn't doing as well as you thought it was doing, get a soil test, at least for pH.
Well, you can do that now. That's a good time to do it.
Yep, let me ask you a question about that. Okay, so say I tested my pH last year. It's going to be the same this year, right?
Doesn't change much.
It doesn't change too much unless you did something to
you know, brought
if you
in stuff.
Amended something.
If you brought
in topsoil, you brought in new mulch, any kind of liming or any kind of sulfur fertilizers, those are all going to change.
But if you
didn't do much, then it should be close.
I had somebody in the other day who said, gee, it wasn't doing all that well, and I limed it. And, of course, what we found out is that was exactly the wrong thing to do.
Because it went the wrong direction?
It made it more alkaline.
Right, and they wanted to go the other way. So
I remember pool pH kits. We had an old above-ground pool when I was a kid. So you had a little beaker, and you put water in there. And I mean, is it the same thing with soil?
You can actually get
the same thing.
Some stores have little kits. You do have to – usually you add water, and you want to use distilled water or rainwater. You don't want to use tap water.
That's right, because that can change it.
The only thing I would caution is these pH kits that you get, we sell them, or anybody sells them, they only have a limited range. So if your pH is way off, it may not be accurate.
Yep.
You know, if you've got a pH of 7.8 and your indicator, your test only goes to 7, you don't know what you have.
That's true. I use an electronic meter, and it kind of works pretty well. Mine, I will say, costs more than your average one. It's like a professional-grade pH meter. I will say that I've had folks compare that. They want to see how their pH compares with their little cheap $14 one to mine. And I will say, you know, for the most part, they're not way off. They're in the general rule. It's just not going to always get you to 7.1. It might get you to 7.
I'm kind of old school. I like the little Cornell kit that has bromothymol blue and
you add the color
red and phenol red.
And then you compare it to a chart.
It's really accurate.
Yeah, and that is really accurate.
Well, how does the electronic one work? I mean, without getting too geeky about the whole thing, how does the electronic
one work? It's two little probes, and it basically just, you want to make sure that the soil has a little bit of, like he said, moisture to it.
Yeah, it must be a charge. It must measure a charge.
It measures a charge.
It's a conductivity meter.
Yeah.
Is what they
and we're really talking a measure of mine. You know, 0 to 14. It does the whole spectrum, and it measures it .1.
There is another easier way. You just have to wait maybe a week or so. Is you can mail a sample to the Extension Service at Cornell or the Extension Service at Massachusetts or probably any state, and they will, for a fee, not using that much, they will test it for you.
Yeah, Cooperative Extension does that here
Cornell
for New York.
Cornell is like $25 or something like that. But they give you a whole range. They don't just do pH. They'll do all your nutrients.
You can send it out for a complete fertility test.
Yeah. So what's more conductive, acid or alkaline?
Well, you know, what we're really talking about is for plant health, it's the plants prefer a certain pH. And people have asked me, why do they like that 6.5 kind of sweet spot? And the reason why is because nutrients are in that soil. But if it's at a low pH, there's a lot of nutrients, or a high pH, a lot of nutrients just cannot be taken in by the plant. So let's say, you know, you got a really, really really alkaline pH. Iron gets really locked up in an alkaline pH. So, you know, you see iron deficiency symptoms. And then, a lot of people say, well, if you actually recognize it as iron, you could start to dump iron on. But dumping iron on doesn't change the symptom doesn't go away because iron was there the whole time. It wasn't lacking. It's just that it was locked up because of that pH. So most plants like a 6.5 as a general sweet spot. And that's just because most nutrients are readily available in that range. Goes too high or too low.
It's also a really good question for the science forum.
What? How it works?
Yes.
Yeah, that was my question that you said it's based on conductivity. You didn't answer my question. Is alkaline or acid more conductive? I mean, if it's sending a signal, these two probes.
That's for the science forum.
Come on, man. I want to know about the gadgets. All right, let's do some emails, and then we'll take a break. It's gardening today. Greg, Fred, and Bob are soldiering on here. Dale Isle is not with us today. This is from Monday, and I sympathize with this person. It's Robert. This is happening to our rhododendrons, and there's a picture here. Rhododendrons, they look very wilted. They're green. And Robert writes, these are what my rhododendrons are looking like after the long winter. I'm not out in the country, but only a few blocks from the studio by Albany High School. Will they come back? I scratched the bark, and they're still green underneath. If they don't come back, can I cut them back to the ground and have them come back from the roots?
That's a lot of questions. We were reviewing this earlier, and cold weather, frozen ground can easily keep the leaves tipped down and curled until the ground thaws out completely. We just heard that the frost might still be in the ground a couple of feet down. That would even do it. So the first thing to do is nothing and wait till the frost is gone.
Yeah.
If the leaves are green, if the stems are green, it probably is frost. There's other things it could be that we'll talk about, but more than likely I would wait until at least the 1st of May and then see how they look. They should, if they're okay, firm right up and stand up.
That curling mechanism is a protective thing. The plant is trying to minimize the surface area that's exposed to the sun and wind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's trying to protect itself. As soon as it's not as worried about the cold, it'll open back up.
Oh, you know what? You brought up the wind. Okay, yeah. So this happened to us, and it's still happening, although yesterday I saw signs that these guys were starting to come back.
Yeah, and that's basically the leaves they dry out, and they do sell sprays like anti-desiccant sprays. You can actually put them on through the winter, and it actually helps to prevent that from happening. And if you're in a spot where you are getting a little bit more wind, or you are getting a little bit more like exposure, we do recommend using that kind of a product.
What Greg said is to wait until maybe May, but if they look like that in May, then we got problems.
We had a terrible wind. I mean, we had it around here, and I don't live that far from our writer. We had a terrible storm. There was snow, and then there was ice, and then terrible wind.
Okay.
And that's when these guys started wilting. So,
It is adding up to basically looks like cold damage. And if that's the case, which is what we kind of think, it will definitely bounce back. And if they didn't, like by May, You could actually maybe cut those to the ground and get a new plant.
If they're well established and they don't have a root rot disease, which we talked about earlier, which does mimic that symptom, except it would not occur unless it was warm weather and summer.
Okay.
If it has that, then cutting it back would not be helpful. But if it somehow has some desiccation and actually the branches have browned up, but the stem is still green a little below, cutting it back will be fine.
Okay. All right. One more email, and then we'll have to make it fast, and then we'll hit the break, and then whatever. This is from Jessica. I have a cold frame for the first time this year. Can I start bush beans under a cold frame in a section of the garden where they won't be moved? If so, when? I'm in zone 5/5B. Can I put the gold frame over the seeds? The cold frame over the seeds planted in early May, leave the cold frame until late May, and get a head start on my beans. Thanks. And that's from Jessica in Schuylerville.
Yes. She could do exactly that.
What's a cold frame?
A cold frame is just a little mini greenhouse you put over or in your garden.
Ah.
It's generally made out of wood.
It's a box with a glass top.
A glass top of something that just protects it. Yeah. It just insulates it a little bit.
You could do that at the beginning of May. You wouldn't do that now.
No.
Not with beans.
No.
You do it with lettuce or something like that.
The deal would be to put the cold frame out whenever you're ready so that the soil warms inside of it, but still wait until early May to plant, because normally we're suggesting you plant beans at the end of May.
Uh-huh.
Right, so you would have a good 30-day head start.
All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We'll hit the phones in a moment. So many emails to get through. So many calls. So little time. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. Gardening. We'll be back. Wes Montgomery, tune up here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. It's gardening today. Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery in Latham. What's happening over at Fadigan's?
We are unloading trucks as we speak.
Really? Well, you're not.
Shouldn't you
be helping out the fellas? No?
No, I just drive the forklift now.
Oh, I like it. So you're in charge, right?
I don't lift anymore.
Hey, you, unload that truck. Are you the same way, Greg Ward?
Pretty much exactly. Oh, they They don't let me on the forklift.
Oh, really? They don't let you on the forklift?
No, I don't have
Why?
To do that part.
Do you need a license for that?
You do need, yes, you do need some safety certification. But no, there are people who drive it better than me.
Yeah.
That's why.
So what's happening at Wards?
Yeah. So like Bob, the lots of primarily plants, woody plants in containers have been arriving. You know, we talked about planting a little bit and how there might be still some frost in the ground. But but if there isn't, technically you could go out and plant today. Yeah. I mean, definitely in the next couple of weeks, I would say most of us will be able to do something. Not saying you have to, but it is definitely time. We've gotten a few pansies. Pansies are sort of the harbinger of spring for color. It's something that would work really well in a container now.
Right.
To put those out in the garden, we talked about, you know, sort of is the garden frost-free or not, and can you work the soil? I think it's a little early to put them in the ground out in the open.
Yeah.
But if you're going to put them in a nice pot by the side of the door, that's a great thing to do.
We saw that this weekend it may get down in the mid-20s.
Oh, yeah. So I'm not, thank you. I'm not going to put my papayas out today.
A little bit early. Yeah.
It's a little cold. It's
much too early for that. And the coconut tree. What's happening over at the Landis Arboretum, Fred?
Yeah, so we are, you know, in spring mode. Things are waking up. We've seen first flowers of the year. The witch hazel is in bloom, full bloom. Looks really good.
They smell great.
We've got it's the Chinese witch hazel. It's just a real showstopper when you get to the parking lot. We've got snowdrops up. We've got winter aconite up. Some spring crocus are up. So there's definitely a lot of action in the gardens already. It's things are waking up, and we're getting ready to do a lot of Landis grown stuff. So cleaning out the propagation room and.
Nice.
You know, we haven't quite taken away our winter protection yet. The ground guys, they were saying, let's get the winter protection off. And I'm like, just give it a little bit more time because next thing you know, it's a little early and there's not a lot of other good green choices out there yet. So don't take them down quite yet.
Yeah,
but,
you never know in this month. I always say March be the cruelest month because someday. All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551.
Skunkavage?
What are you guys doing? You were breaking out of the discussion groups.
He's bringing up some skunk
about
cabbage.
Spring.
Okay.
So that's a classic.
I got a photo of
So that's a skunk cabbage.
That is the flower
does
of
it
skunk
stink?
Cabbage. It does.
Does it?
Yes. It's a fly.
And that's another classic.
A fly pollinated, I believe.
It does.
I think it is.
It really
Whose
does.
Phone is this?
Mine.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's one of those things. Early spring, you start to see those guys pop.
More than you wanted to know.
All right. So, Lynn is in Shelburne, Massachusetts. Lynn, you're on.
Thank you. Hi. I have burlap on a perennial garden. Some of the things have been planted last year. And the bulbs are coming up through the burlap. And, I don't like to see that. Can I take the burlap off?
I would say take the burlap off, especially if if you're not going to break all the green that's popped up through it.
Yeah,
if you can get use a scissor and cut it and just get rid of it. But
I was just going to mention, you're starting to see bulbs come up, daffodils and crocus.
I've
and
got
the
them
like.
Coming up, too.
If it gets cold, they'll be fine. It might burn the tips of the leaves, but this is nature. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, those spring bulbs, they definitely are built for that, so they can take the cold. But, burlap, I'd say get rid of it.
Okay. Well, Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. It's Gardening Today with Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, Bob Graves. Let's go to dear old Delmar. It's a Penny. Hello, Penny.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a 4-foot circular tree stump of a silver maple, and I was wondering, can I plant anything in that, drill holes and put something in that?
It would work. I mean, I've seen, naturally you'll see trees that have rot inside of them, and even before they break apart, you'll see in a lot of cases another species of plant just growing, and people have asked me, how could that plant just grow on that tree? And There's rot inside there, so there's an opportunity. But what you said right there is basically just a container, and it would work. I mean, I would avoid using it for a woody plant. So to me, it would be more of either a perennial, which could last for a few years, number of years, or maybe more annual.
Yeah, it depends.
I was thinking of like a moss or an ivy. Would that work?
Yeah. So the hole, you if there's no rot, if there isn't a depression there
there's
to
no
add
rot.
Soil.
There's a lot of area with no rot.
Yeah, so that means you need to make a container out of this. You need to excavate the center of this.
Okay.
And that's going to be the hardest thing to do.
That's going to be hard.
It is. I was envisioning you've got a stump cut, and a lot of times with silver maple, there's naturally a lot of rot internally. So I'm envisioning a stump that has some internal rot, dark wood, stained wood, not solid.
So that's around the edge of the thing, but the middle is clean.
It's still solid. Okay, so that would be a challenge.
That's going to be hard.
You need to hire someone who's really good and safe with a chainsaw.
Okay.
Right.
Yep, but okay. If you did that, you could certainly get away with it. And if you were thinking, a lot of times people say, do I have to get rid of the stump to plant a new tree? And in that case, you don't. You know, generally I cut the stumps off kind of just below grade or ground level so you don't see them, and then I plant one side or the other. But in your case, you would, you know, just hollow it out, and then you'd have a new container. It lasts for a long time.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pat.
Yep, you got
By
it.
The way, fun fact, Hidden Rot is the working title of my memoir. Did
it's
you know
a good
that?
One.
Yeah, I like
Hidden
that.
Rot.
Let's go to Rutland, Massachusetts. Peter, you're on.
Hi. I have a problem with my raspberries. We've had raspberries in the same spot for like 20 years. The last 3 years, I get zero. I cut them down to the ground or up a few inches. I get nothing.
Oh, boy. Has the conditions changed at all? Are there any trees that got bigger, any more shade or anything like that?
Well, there is a little bit more shade there, but not... I mean, there is more shade there than there has been in the past.
Sometimes I got exactly the same thing. My raspberries have deteriorated. A little bit more shade. The amount of sun that a plant needs changes in not a linear fashion. That is, if you get a little bit more shade and then a little bit more shade, it's okay. And then you get just a little bit more shade and all of a sudden... It's not okay.
Yeah.
So I would be worried about the amount of shade.
So the
All right, I have a couple of apple trees that don't do me much, so maybe I can just cut those back and that will
anything.
One of the things to consider would be to find maybe make a new spot next if you're going to cut the trees, maybe right there, but make a new location that's nice and sunny or recreate it, but then renovate your raspberries. Yeah. Dig them up completely.
Yeah.
Separate them. Get rid of all of the older stuff and replant them nicely spaced in this nice, fresh, well-amended bed. Mm. That'll make a big difference.
That's exactly what all I did. I did that precisely.
Yeah. Peter, thank you very much. Mike in Rexford says, I'm confused about how to prune my raspberry plants. Any advice?
If Dale Isla was here, she would say it depends on the type of raspberries.
Ah,
yes.
But,
so that's what we should have asked this last gentleman, but the raspberries can flower in the spring only, and that way the fruit then forms in July. And those raspberries, you don't prune until after they've fruited. So you prune them in the fall of fruiting. But there are some raspberries that fruit that flower in May, fruit in July, and then go ahead and flower again on the newest wood that came up that summer in August and fruit in September, October. So those, if you just want the fruit in the fall, you cut them to the ground. So you're either cycling the stems that are coming, you know, that are old and dead, which would mean sometime in October, November, winter, or even right now, cutting out all the dead ones and leaving the green ones, or you're cutting them to the ground completely, but of course realizing that they're only going to fruit in the fall. And they have to be fall-bearing raspberries for that to work.
Okay.
So a name would be very helpful.
All right. This is from Bonnie and Troy. And by the way, most of these that I'm reading have come in prior to today. That's how people, how excited they are when you guys come on the show. Bonnie writes in, I have an Oriental pom-pom boulevard cypress that I didn't get to trim last year, so it's very overgrown. What's the earliest I can trim it this year?
You know, I always like to let the new growth kind of occur, because otherwise if you trimmed it now, and a lot of people want to jump on it, let me get it now, I missed it last year. You could do that, but and it's not going to hurt it. But if you just wait till the spring flush of growth occurs and then prune it, then you can get away with generally one pruning per season.
Okay.
With a pom-pom, you're trying to keep it a certain look. So
having a pom-pom is like becoming a barber. They don't stay like that.
No.
You got to keep trimming them.
Yep, you do.
I think, though, if you've let it go, say it's like gotten too fluffy and they're touching.
You can kind of trim it now.
A little trimming now.
Yep.
And then again
afterwards,
in June.
I'd agree with that. Yep.
Two trimmings this
generally,
year.
Generally, you have to do those more than once a year, no matter what.
Yeah, if you want to keep them tight.
Keep
and the same for those spirals.
Any type of topiary.
Yeah, any of those topiaries.
You know, people come in and get a topiary and think it's going to stay like that. It doesn't.
It doesn't. No,
I
it
think
needs...
for those, like a an early June trim after they've flushed, and then a nice August 1st trim or mid-August for the second trim.
To kind of tighten it all ideal. Up.
By the way, what kind of name is Oriental Pom Pom Boulevard Cypress? I mean, that takes 20 minutes to say. I mean, how many different kinds of cypress are there?
There's quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh.
Could have left off the Oriental part.
You can't say that. Is there an Occidental Pom Pom Boulevard Cypress?
It's actually, I think, Camassiparis cyanoides.
Yeah, whatever. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800.
There's a lot of big ones.
It was Pacifera, but I think it's cyanoides.
All right.
I think it's Pacifera.
Camassiparis, Pacifera, Phyllifera, Aurea, Nanogracilis.
I don't.
That's just one cultivar of Camassiparis.
He's got his finger on the button here.
Gardenus annoyus. Let's go to David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Thanks for a great show here now.
Okay.
I have two questions. One is I have an azalea that is about 4.5 feet high and about 7 feet wide, and it's about 10 years old. And it had nice blooms last year. But then we had the drought, and it was a pretty a dry period this year as well, the winter part. And it looks like it's not doing well. What should I do with that?
Yeah, so it's probably kind of like what we were talking about earlier in the show, and most likely just cold damage. You know, it's probably going to be fine. Our conditions right now are just really kind of perfect for like letting all. And I'm assuming your leaves are kind of drooping on this thing, and that's what you're seeing.
Well, a lot of the leaves on the bottom have gone, but they're few on the top.
Are they? Are the leaves?
But a lot of the branches are still green if you break it.
Did the leaves become discolored at all? A little bit, a little yellowish.
Oh yeah, it seems like it.
I in the heat of last year with an azalea, I'd be a little worried about lace bug, which is an insect that sucks the juice right out of the leaves.
Yeah, and so and then getting back to whether it's doing okay, if those branches are green, it is certainly alive. The flower buds that formed already July, August, and they would be sitting right on the tips of the plant. They wouldn't be huge yet, but they would be there, and they would be, you know, one in the middle and possibly a couple little ones on the edges. So, and you can almost kind of squeeze them and say, oh, yeah, there's a big bud, and then maybe there's a couple small ones. And so, again, it's March. It's going to bloom probably early May, this one. It sounds like some kind of, spreading form, sort of a quasi-evergreen azalea. And I think I would just wait until it does that, and then you can call us back up, and we'll tell you how to prune it if it needs it.
Okay.
Okay, I have one more question.
Oh, great.
My maple trees are dying back. What's with that?
So can you give us a little bit more info? Just how is it dying back from the top down on this tree?
It seems like it's from the bottom up.
Okay.
And it seems like one third of the trees in 1 year has died.
So you're having dead branches on the bottom, but the tops of the trees are looking pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how old do you say these trees are?
It's about 50 years old.
About 50 years old. So in general, dead branches on older trees forming from the bottom and somewhat through the canopy, but as long as the top is healthy, is more or less normal. Tree gets to be 50, 60 years old. It starts to get shady down on those bottom branches. And it just, you know, some of those bottom branches are going to go. The bigger, more concerning thing to me would be if you told me that the top was, you know, it was dying from the top down. And that's not normal. That's, you know, that's telling me that there's other issues going on. But some dead branches on the bottom, 50-year-old trees, that's kind of normal.
David, thanks for the call. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, who you just heard. Greg Ward, Bob Graves, they're both here as well. It's 800-348-2551. Shelley is in Kingston. Hello, Shelley.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I really love your show.
Thank you.
We have two beautiful holly bushes that I put in. It's the third year, and they're covered in white mold, and I thought it was mold, and I took it to the gardener I bought it from, and she said it's aphids and gave me some 7 to put on it.
So it's covered with woolly aphids.
And that happened recently. You went to the garden center and they.
Yes, just this winter. I mean, it happened this winter. My husband noticed that the leaves were all gone, and we thought we were going to lose them. So I was very nervous about it. And she's told me to spray it with 7 and then hit it with Holly Tone. But I heard your show, and I thought, let me call and ask the expert. Mm.
I mean, I think in order to be sure, we'd love to see some photos.
Yeah.
I have a photo.
Which would be tough on the radio.
So if you wanted to email them.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Either directly to you, Greg? Sure.
Or
you can go to the show, and I'll email it to everybody.
Why don't we do that?
Or why don't you send it to Vox Pop, VOXPOP, at WAMC.
We just want to make sure that it is.
There's a couple of woolly things that get on hollies, and they're generally sucking insects.
Yep.
7 is best for a chewing insect.
Seven.
It's an insecticide.
Seven.
It's an insecticide.
As opposed to the number 8.
There's also an 8?
Yep.
Vox Pop. The number, the email address is VoxPop.
Yeah, VoxPop at WAMC.org. Yes, that's it.
It could be a type of scale, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, scale.
In which case, I'd be thinking more about an oil spray of some sort.
Yeah, but if it was aphid, if it is aphid, it's pretty easily to control with an insecticidal soap. So it's just a matter of accurately diagnosing it.
So I might not lose it, or I will. I just don't want to lose the plant.
Two or three photos, one of the whole plant, some of the close-up stems of the leaves that are still left, so we can get
I'll forward it over to the fellas, and also Dale Isla, who will be back at any point. So thanks, Shelley. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. All right, 1 minute before the break. Let's dispense with another email that came in. This one at 8:30 this morning. This is from Kevin in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Maybe it's Lewiston, I don't know, but it's spelled Lewistown. What's your advice for building a compost bin? Best size and shape? Place in the sun or the shade? Should you use treated lumber? Any other advice? I'm inflecting up. I live in Zone 6B, 1.5-acre suburban lot bordering woods, neighboring state forest land. Size is not the issue, but animals could be. So what do you think? In 1 minute.
So, it does matter. Size does matter when it comes to compost piles. If it's not high enough and big enough and it doesn't get enough internal temperature, it's not actually going to cook and get rid of weed seeds. And I do have a really good fact sheet that I put out a while ago. So if you wanted me to email that to you, if they're listening, you could hit me up with an email, Fred.
Oh, Lord, what am I, referral service now? What's going on?
Fred at landisarboretum.org.
Oh, that's a good idea.
O-R-G.
And go directly to Fred.
Forward that right. Yeah, I can forward it right to him.
You know, with a compost pile, it does have to have some size because it has to get the temperature, but it doesn't have to be enclosed either.
No, it doesn't.
You know, you make a pile of stuff, it's going to compost eventually. Yeah.
And I actually don't like them enclosed, and I always recommend having
to turn them and move them a little bit.
Right, and so it's harder to move them exactly. And then I always like to have more than one grade of compost. So one's all the raw material that's breaking down, and one's kind of in the process it's broken down.
So multiple containers or locations.
And it also matters what you put into that pile. And
I generally don't put food waste in it because you're going to draw vermin.
Yeah.
That's right. Vegetable waste is good.
Vegetable waste.
Vermin don't eat vegetables.
So you can throw your tomatoes in there and maybe your watermelon rinds, but no eggshells, no bones.
Like old spare ribs and whatnot.
Don't do that.
Nope, you definitely want to have a mix of a green material, nitrogen material, and browns.
So the products from the garden, if you're cutting back things, if you're weeding the garden, those things can all go in there. And it should be in a sunny location to get the temperature.
That's right.
All right, everybody good? Let's take a break. We're a little bit overdue here, but we got the thing from Pennsylvania taken care of. 800-348-2551. Gardening with Fred, Bob, Greg. A little Count Basie for you. Gardening today, Ray Graff here, and you over there, 800-348-2551. Greg Ward, Bob Graves, and Fred Breglia join us. Two quick emails, and then we got to go back to the phones here. This is also from earlier today. Ann in Adams. First, I have a giant lilac, at least 25 feet tall. All the blooms are at the top. Is this a good candidate for cutting all the way back and letting it regrow?
It is. That's what we generally recommend with those really tall, overgrown lilacs. All the growth is at the end.
Yeah.
Ideally, you have some sprouts or suckers coming up around the base. Leave those if you do, but if you don't, you cut them right down to the ground, 6 inches to the ground, 8 inches to the ground, and as soon as you start to see those buds swell, so really soon, if not now,
okay, and
you cut them to the ground, and you're going to get a brand new shrub, and the only thing is you probably won't get any flowers this first year. But then you take out selectively some of those stems or sucker growth, depending, and next year you'll have a new shrub and a bunch of blooms.
Second question from Ann and Adams. I want to prepare an area for flowers, but want to mulch it so I don't plant the seeds, then mulch? Oh, no. So do I plant the seeds, then mulch? Will they make it up through 2 inches of mulch?
No, that is the idea behind mulch, is to stop seed germination.
Yep.
So what you usually would do is you make the bed. If you're going to make it early before you have time to seed, you could go ahead and mulch it and wait, and then you would remove the mulch in wherever locations, you know, like 2 or 3 inches across and 10 feet along if you're going to make a cutting garden, and cultivate that soil lightly, seed, and leave that exposed so that you don't push the mulch back over it until they germinate. And once they're up and looking like something, then you can just push the mulch right underneath them.
Okay. Elizabeth in Troy writes, my yard is 28 feet by 30 feet. How do I clean out or cover the opossum, cat, and raccoon poop? I love the opossum, but all of these leave residue that has worms, et cetera, in them, and I can track it into the house. And what about the vegetables grown in the soil? And that's from Elizabeth in Troy with the squirrels.
Break it up. I don't say there's no option. You know, what do you do when you're walking a dog and it poops? You take a bag and you pick it up.
Yeah, use rakes, use gloves. Yeah.
Something.
Might want to, put something around the garden to keep the cats out.
Little fence?
A fence would be nice.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the phones. Jessica's in Del Mar. Jessica, you're on.
Hi, I'm wondering if you have any tips for dealing with chipmunks that eat my sunflowers. If I plant the seeds in the ground, they eat those. And if I start them inside and then transplant them, usually the next day I come out and it's been bitten in half.
A little bit of fencing probably is probably going to be your best in defense with those, at least to get them up to a size when they can defend themselves. They wouldn't attack them once they get big, but it's that little early part that you want to protect them. So I would say, something like hardware cloth. You might need to create a little top on those. Hardware cloth is this like 1/4 inch by 1/4 inch or 1/2 inch by 1/2 inch size metal fabric. It's not a fabric at all. I don't know why they call it cloth, but
yeah, wear gloves.
It's sharp.
I still have scars from
that. It's galvanized. You can buy it in a roll. Chicken wire is too, it's easy to work with, but it's just too big of a hole. And then I create little tops on those just in the areas that, certain things they won't bother, certain things they will, but
depends on how determined they are, because they can climb right up over a fence too. Sometimes you got to put a top.
That's what I mean, like a top over it to get them going. But there's repellents. But I don't know how effective those are going to be to stop them.
Chipmunks, it's not.
Chipmunks can be persistent.
So. We get them in the greenhouse. I mean, the doors are open.
Cats love chipmunks.
Don't say that.
Yeah.
All right. I can't say that. That's right. Don't put your cat outside. Rich Guthrie will be upset on account of the birds. Forget I mentioned it. All right?
Everyone loves sunflower seedlings. Yeah. When they're 4 or 5 inches tall, they must be super delicious.
I've never tried one.
It's not just chipmunks. Any animal will eat them.
It does seem to be the top of the list.
Even birds.
So protecting until they become a bigger plant, and then you don't need the material anymore.
Jessica, thanks a lot for the call and good luck. 800-348-2551. Linda's in Troy. Hello, Linda.
Oh, hi. Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes.
Oh, good.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah, I'm a part of this neighborhood here, and we're getting ready. I'm heading the project. We're going to restore the meadow and the empty urban lot. And with wildflowers, we want to plant, pollinators, wildflowers, native plants there. And right now it's all beak grass, the mounding, and it's full sun, and it's a pretty big
spot. I mean, it's very large, but I'm thinking we'll do maybe 2,000 square feet. And I just wondered about, you know, preparing the soil. I can't imagine that this group is going to dig up all that beet grass, and I just wondered if you had any recommendations.
Yep. I know one thing I always like to do is smother gardens. You know, digging up is a lot of work. Smothering it lets all of that material stay there, die, and turn into organic matter that the new plants use. So if you have a way to cut it down, get it cut low, this time of year is perfect timing. Cut it right to the ground, smother it with either a black plastic or some kind of weed fabric.
How many weeks do you think it'll take when the sun comes out to really cook that?
I think you're going to, by the time, you know, you're ready to plant, which is, you know, what, mid-May?
I think it would do it.
I think you'd be all right.
Just mow it down.
Because it needs light. Okay. If you get no food, no sunlight on that plant between now and mid-May, I think you're going to be in pretty good shape. And then you got to just rough it up.
Chew it up.
You know, you might have to hardback rake some of that stuff to get
if
some of that material out.
A lot of your wildflowers, if you don't take care of that competition, they're not going to make it.
Yep, right? Yep. And then once you get them growing, you know, a lot of these wildflower mixes have a ton of seeds, ton of different varieties. But what we found over the years is that only a couple of those varieties. So the first year, it's going to look really good. But then in future years, you may end up with like two or three out of the, let's say, dozen different types of wildflowers that take dominance. That's still good. But just, you know, that's one of the things that we've seen from experience.
And if you're really focused on pollinators, on native pollinators, then you want to use native flowers, you know, some fairly specific mix. And those mixes.
I think I've got a good mix.
Good. All right, Linda, thanks a lot and good luck. It's the Gardening Show today. We have Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery, who took an hour out from driving the forklift today just to be with us, which is very nice. Renee's in Ballston Spa. Renee.
Hey, hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Couple quick questions. I maybe foolishly put a huge fern that was hanging on my outside porch all summer. I put it in the basement. I should have consulted with someone at that point, but I thought, let me just put it there for the winter and see what happens. I haven't done anything to it. It didn't turn brown, amazingly. It's just starting now. So how do I reintroduce that, or can I even back into the yard?
Yeah, if it is green, this was a Boston fern. This was in a container hanging basket.
Huge.
Yeah. So the first thing
fern. I didn't want one.
First thing
big,
to do is sort of wake it up. Make sure it is, in fact, if nice green fronds, maybe a few new ones are coming out. And once you have determined that, if that's maybe something you can determine today, great. But if once it's kind of woken up and is growing, you've watered it a few times, it's a nice sunny spot in your house, you could then probably take it out of the pot at some point in the next month or so, remove any old sort of kind of tissue, you know, old stems that are just not working. You're going to sort of reduce it, maybe shake all the soil off of it, and then clean it up so all you have is the whatever looks good and green, and then repot that into the container with some nice new potting soil and maybe a little some all-purpose fertilizer that would be good for containers. And then you should be ready by then. It'll be June. You can put it right outside.
Cool. All right, Renee, thanks a lot. Now, ferns were here before there were trees, right? Ferns are ancient.
They are ancient.
Yeah. So you don't have to do much once they get going, right?
They're very hardy.
There are great kind of container plant, hanging basket plant for those locations where you're having trouble with other things. Usually low light is an issue. You know, you put a begonia there, it can do pretty well. You put a fuchsia there, it might not. You know, if the petunia is not performing well, a Boston fern is pretty amazing.
Yeah, okay. It really is. It's amazing how much that'll grow through and how much difference in like exposure, light.
We overwintered a bunch of them.
Shade.
We had a lot of them last year, and they're in the greenhouse, and they kind of deteriorate over the winter. We went in there in the last week, watered them real heavy, started to fertilize them, and it was a matter of just days before they started to put out new growth.
They are tough.
Okay. Yep. Let's go to Ulster County, and Leslie, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
For taking my call. I have a old, I think it's old, kind of rangy lavender with, it looks like two main trunks that just stick up, and I was wondering if I could when I could trim it, and two, if I could cut almost like top off those two main trunks, if that would be okay to thicken it up.
It is.
Is it a potted lavender or in the ground?
No, it's just kind of on the side of the road, kind of like the lavender, you know, next to my fence.
And so at the bottom of it, at the very base, are there little shoots that sort of wintered over, little tufts? Coming out of right at the base of the stems?
I don't think so.
This is a lilac that she's talking about, right?
Not a lavender, right, a lilac. Right.
I heard lavender.
Lavender color, I think, is what she mentioned.
I said lavender, but I meant lilac.
I heard it that way, too.
Yeah, so when you started going down tufts, I'm like, wait a minute, I think we're going down a lavender road.
Sorry. Yeah, but
we're gonna blame Greg for that.
Okay, agreed.
And with your lilac, you can cut those big stems right down to the ground, and you will get brand new shrub this year. You won't get any flowers, but that is, there's not a, not, you can't do this with everything, but some things work really well with this. And this is called rejuvenation pruning. You know, I think Bob sometimes refers to it as stumping them. And you're basically just cutting them down right 6 inches to the ground. And anything that is growing, if you have any suckers, leave them. But just keep an eye. You'll get a whole bunch of new. And you want to do it before it leaves out. You want to do it right when the buds, right around now.
And just to redeem myself, you could take one of the two this year.
Yep,
and then get a few flowers on one you leave this year, and then take that one out next year.
I like that.
That's a partial redemption there.
Leslie, thanks a lot. We'll go now to Judy. Judy in Saugerties. Hello, Judy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You betcha.
I have a question about hollies. I've got inkberry hollies around the perimeter of the house. They die back just a little bit, maybe in the winter. Sometimes the deer are chewing on them. But this year, half of my best holly is the leaves are actually turning sort of black at the stem end and gold. And there's just many, many branches all on one side like that.
They can really get hurt in the winter.
Yeah.
And I've seen it in a building where on one side of the building they got hurt and the other side of the building they didn't. So I would wait.
No kidding.
Yeah. I think if you check, as we've been talking about with a lot of other things, if you want to just check the stem of those really discolored ones to see if, you know, with a little scratch test, and is it green?
So the stem looks like it's getting, the tip of the stem looks like it's kind of black. When I broke it off, I could still see a little green in there.
Yeah, and so work your way down a little bit until you see some green, and know that it's definitely going to sprout from there down. And so, as Bob said, we'll just wait until we get into some warmer weather, and you start to see a little activity. And at that point, you could give it a good haircut.
They do like to be fertilized, too. They would benefit from fertilizing.
Yeah, and we're getting into a good time of year to fertilize.
Hollystone would be good for
something
them.
Like that, yep.
Okay. All right, very quickly, we have time for maybe one more here. Let's go to Cornwall, and it's Bill's turn. Hello, Bill. You got about a minute or so.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
I am calling to because I've got a wisteria that's in my yard, it doesn't bloom. It's been just like about 15 years, always leaves out, always sends a lot of stems. But I can never actually, maybe I'll get one or two flowers on it. It's got a coverage about good, like 10 by 15 on top of an arbor. Well lit. So I'm not sure.
Okay.
So pruning them is really helpful. And so if you haven't been doing that, that could be a great way to stimulate some flower opening. And that would be all of that long, skinny, usually it's sort of a pale yellow color. All the stuff that looks like it grew last year, when you follow that back to where it came out, then the wood is usually a grayer brown, and they're often are little sort of woody spurs, little bumps on the wood that are not attached to those long, pale stems.
The other thing I might suggest along that line is root pruning.
I was gonna
cut
say
the
that.
Roots just a little bit. A lot of times if you stress a plant a little bit, in an evolutionary sense, it wants to preserve the species, so it will flower.
Yep.
So hurt it a little bit.
Yep. And it's common. It's common with wisteria around here. We see this one. I mean, we've got one at the Arboretum, that same exact thing. And the times that we've had the best blooms on it have been the times when we've had to cut it back really hard. It's growing on the building too much. We had to get it away. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my God, it's an awesome plant.
I just want to make sure I said that those yellow pale stems, you're going to remove all of that.
Okay.
All that new growth from last year that is a different color, take it off.
And you can definitely prune them pretty hard.
Yeah.
And hurt them. That's the main thing, right?
Well, a little bit what that does, too, is a plant will put out all kinds of leaf growth and sort of forgets about flowering.
Yeah. Because it's happy.
It's happy.
And it doesn't need to think about reproduction.
You got to hurt them a little bit when you stress it,
which is where Bob's going with this, you stress that plant out.
Understand.
And now it says, hey, I need to reproduce. I got to survive.
All right, Fred Breglia, how do people find the Landis Arboretum?
Yep, so we're at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and our website is landisarboretum.org.
Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah, Ward's Nursery is 600 South Main Street in Great Barrington, wardsnursery.com.
And Bob Graves, Fadigan's
is at 1140 Troy Schenectady Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway near the airport road.
I think you guys did very well in Dale Isla's absence. I think it was all right, right?
We managed.
All right, so we'll see you in 2 weeks, yeah?
2 weeks.
Yes.
We'll have to remind everybody 12 times?
Not me.
All right, fair enough. Support comes from the New York State CDFI Coalition, presenting From Redlining to Resilience, a panel discussion at book signing March 24th at 6 p.m. in Albany. NYSCDFI.org. And Kingdom County Productions, screening Jay Craven's Lost Nation about the Revolutionary War era fight between Vermont and New York, Sunday, March 23rd at 3:45, Upstate Films, Rhinebeck, upstatefilms.org. Thanks again to Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Chekai screened the calls. All right, I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to welcome back His Majesty, the King of Troy, Rocco DeFazio. And it's going to be troublesome. I got to be honest with you. He just sent this email. I'll be sending along your talking points for my interview tomorrow. Please make sure you stick to my talking points. I repeat, do not stray from my talking points. So he's already annoyed me. The show is at 2 tomorrow. We'll see you then.